Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the front lines in the free fight for freedom and liberty, Olympia, Washington, where it is raining upon raining upon raining. Never seen that before, really, but it's doing it right now. Brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And it's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. Our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ, but we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Ephesians 2, 5 through 6 says, God made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved, and raised us up with him and seated us with him in the heavenly places in Christ Jesus. Whatever is under Jesus Christ's feet, it's under our feet if we're in Christ and Christ is in us. That is a very powerful statement. And it's a statement that we need to start really living by, because things are getting so chaotic out there again. I try not to even look at the news other than to tell folks what's going on for the show, because it can get depressing at times. And it's easy to get fixated on that stuff. Instead, if we just realize that God's in control, if we're doing what we've been called to do, if we're doing exactly what the Lord wants us to do, if we're following the path that we're supposed to be following, all those other things will begin to fade to the background, and then it doesn't become so daunting. You know, some people say, well, how do you do it over there? I mean, it's 1,000 emails a day, all the phone calls, people coming up to you in the halls all the time. You know, how do you do it? Well, the only way you truly can say honestly is by the grace of God. But if you're doing what he's called you to do, you just have to get out there and work and do it, and he'll take care of the rest. And I think we miss that sometimes. You know, we think, oh, well, can't succeed, or maybe I shouldn't because I can't do it really well. Look it, God's got it under control. He does. We just need to show up. We just need to obey. Things will start happening. It's amazing. It's amazing. All right. Got a special guest today, by the way, and hope that we can get her on from Israel. And want to make sure that before we do that, I kind of prep the groundwork a little bit with the Daily Intelligence Briefing, because you know, you hear a lot of things that are going on in the Middle East. I want you to really pay attention to it. So we're going to start first with Turkey. Turkey greenlighting child marriage in one of their government agencies. A lot of people in an uproar there. Jordan asserting its kind of claim again to be the true guardians of the Islamic faith. The Hashemite kingdom used to be the stewards of Mecca, until they were kicked out by the Saudis. So understand what the Jordanians are trying to do right now is to reclaim their original position. It's very important to understand that. Also, Iran engaged, according to Debka file, in a cyber war with the United States, the West, and Iran, and the Saudi Arabian Egyptian UAE coalition. Amazing. And apparently this affected 48 million smartphone users. But really what we're seeing is a true cyber war that has occurred. And that was followed shortly after by another report, Debka file, about the Russians being attacked at their naval base in Tartus, also a nearby airbase as well, by drones from terrorists. Six of those drones were hacked and then taken control of. Seven were shot down. So you have, for the very first time in the history of modern warfare, of history of all warfare, a drone war actually occurred in the Middle East. On top of that, now you have Israeli airstrikes in Syria and essentially an announcement from the Trump administration that they're going to keep bases in place in post-war Syria for blocking Russian-Iranian consolidation. So again, as this aligning is happening in the Middle East, you're seeing the chess pieces being moved on the board, and you are seeing very, very clearly that the United States understands that there is an aligning with Iran against this Saudi, Egyptian, UAE coalition, Turkey out in the cold, Jordan out in the cold to a certain extent, and the Israelis obviously kind of caught in the middle, although they have a better relationship with Saudi Arabia than they do with everybody else, and Egypt. So when you see the Trump administration doing this and leaving these U.S. bases in the Middle East, it is a strategic move to check the consolidation of the Iranian-backed coalition. Now, the Iranians already have a close alliance with the Syrian president and also Hezbollah, which is, I think, by most experts known as kind of the A-team of terrorism in the Middle East, and they are predominantly in Lebanon. So you see how things are lining up. Now, most of you that have read the Bible will see some extraordinary similarities between some passages of Scripture. Probably talk about that on a later show, but I think it's interesting how all of this is coming together right now. Also on the international front, North Korea. Something being leaked out that the United States was going to take a bloody nose strategy. So in other words, if the North Koreans get close to another test or do another test, that they do a limited strike against North Korea to send a message, we are serious. Usually that stuff isn't leaked out, but it was in this case. And so as a result, I think that we have a strategy that may be going by the wayside very quickly. And also, I think that it shows how tense the situation is over there. More U.S. assets being moved to Guam, specifically air assets, more than are already in place in the theater. So again, a lot of things shaping up on the North Korean side as well. Now, the doctrine of not trying to fight a war on two fronts is kind of coming to play here. Although the United States successfully did that in World War II, I don't know if we want to be involving ourselves in places where it isn't a direct threat to the United States. Now, North Korea has directly threatened the United States, and constitutionally, if we bring it before Congress, we have the debate, we declare war, it's constitutional. But we got to be careful to do these little ad hoc things, or maybe ask permission to the United Nations, or do whatever that has been done over the last 40 years. We need to follow the Constitution and focus on the actual threats to the United States of America, the direct threats to the United States of America. Also on the national front, moving next to the global warming debate, the climate change debate. Now Al Gore is saying that global warming causes global cooling. And anyway, look, here's the bottom line. Most scientists, if they are honest and reasonable, will agree that one of the greatest things that affects the climate of the world is the sun and the lack of sunspots or the presence of sunspots. We happen to be going into, over the last 300 years, actually 200 years, probably better, a lack of sunspot period. In other words, the sunspots and the amounts of them are diminishing over time as an average. In fact, right now we're going into a long period without sunspots. We are heading towards something called a Maunder minimum, or a minimum number of sunspots, which has historically in the past, over 400 years ago, indicated a period of cooling. Some may remember this from school, known as the Little Ice Age. That's what's going on scientifically. The other thing that's interesting is the effect of the moon in the changing of the tides and the currents and the rotation, or the decadal oscillation of our oceans. That also has an effect on our climate. So the sun and the moon in that respect would have an effect on the climate. It's important to understand that human interaction with the earth. And particularly, let's just talk about Washington State, how small of an impact we actually have on the world from a total CO2 output. And it's also interesting to note that most of that CO2 output, by and large, over a quarter, some may say up to a third of our entire CO2 output of the state of Washington comes from catastrophic wildfires. So the greatest thing we could do to reduce carbon pollution in Washington State is to manage our forests better, if you believe in global warming. But even if you don't believe in global warming and you just don't like wildfires and your air dirty, we should take the fuel load out of our forests and manage them better. Pretty simple stuff. And the science is there. And people keep saying, you know, I hear this sometimes where people will say, evolution is a fact. Look at, okay, logic says theories are not facts. Global warming or climate change theory is not a fact. It is not conclusively proven. Otherwise, it would not be a theory. Some people confuse theory as well with a hypothesis. A hypothesis is an idea that's going to be tested. A theory is an idea that has been tested and has some proof to it. Some. The problem is when there is contradictory primary source evidence introduced that refutes that theory then has to change. You'll see that with the evolutionary theory. You'll also see that with the climate change theory. But regardless, they are not facts, logically. And I hear this, or I should say I read this on Facebook, and people keep they have more militancy about holding on to things like evolution and climate change than they do having reasonable conversations. They say they believe in science, but science is a process. And if you don't believe in the process and you're not willing to have that reasonable debate, and all you say is, no, it's not true, it's just evolution is a conclusively proven fact, and global warming is a conclusively proven fact, and you're not willing to reason, you actually then are, by definition, unreasonable. You are, by definition, illogical. You are, by definition, then outside the scope of what we would call decent, rational conversation. So if you're going to be posting on Facebook, do it the right way. Argue logically. Use facts. Back those facts up with primary sources, and we will all be better for it. All right, moving next on the national front, too. This prosecution of a man in California for anti-Muslim posts. It's interesting to me that we're even having this conversation because it seems to keep coming up that if something is not exactly the way somebody would like to believe, that should now then be shut down. If we truly believe in the Constitution, if we truly believe in it, then we will fight to the death to protect somebody's right to say their viewpoint. We will fight to the death to protect the right of somebody to have that viewpoint. And you know, if you think about it, that's the Christian ideal. The Lord is a gentleman, gives us the choice to choose him or not. He doesn't say you can't have that viewpoint. Because if you do that, if you say, no, you can't have that viewpoint, that's not love. It can't be love. Love is allowing that choice. It's actually a profound statement if you understand it. But this comes up with this man posting is now going to be prosecuted for it. Not only is that a chilling of free speech, but fairly alarming that what the leftists have threatened is actually coming to fruition. And I think we all, as Americans, should be alarmed at that. I really do. Moving next now to this thing I would call Operation Condor, because that's what it was labeled. There are a lot of things in speculation about what has happened with the NSA spying on Donald Trump during his presidential campaign, and then also after he was elected. There is a story. If you get a chance, you can just type it into the internet to start page. Type in Operation Condor, how NSA Director Mike Rogers saved the U.S. from a massive constitutional crisis. And it lays out a timeline of what happened in all the revealing of the facts of the use of the Obama administration, of the NSA, for political purposes. And it lays out the case. Now, you got to read it for yourself. I'm not going to get into it a lot. Suffice to say that after Admiral Rogers went to Trump Tower and briefed Trump and didn't tell anybody he was going to do it, the next day Trump moved his operation out of Trump Tower to New Jersey. And this article is surmising that that's because Admiral Rogers told him what was happening. So it is the one of the most well-researched, well-outlined, well-summarized articles I've ever read on what is happening in the United States and what happened at the end of the Obama administration. It's fascinating stuff, absolutely fascinating stuff. All right. Also on the national front, want to bring to your attention a couple of things. First of all, for those of you that have been following Patriot Radio, those of you that have been following some of the things that have been happening with James O'Keefe and his Project Veritas, you'll be, I think, very heartened to know, and this is WorldNet Daily reporting, that Twitter workers have ways to ban users of its social media platform without letting them know. In other words, you're essentially throttling conservatives so that not a lot of people see them. Now, people have accused Facebook of that, but it's essentially a shadow ban. And Project Veritas has revealed this in regards to Twitter. What does that mean? There is another social media outlet called MeWe, M-E-W-E. I've set up an account on there. I've had it there for a while. And as this throttling, is this attempt to take away free speech from Americans when they don't agree with them, specifically conservative speech, Christian speech, then we're probably going to have to look at moving to another social media platform that's not going to do that. And MeWe is one of those. So take a look at that for yourself. But I wanted to bring this up because it kind of goes to what we've been talking about on this show, that there are a lot of people out there that would rather conservatives not be on social media, because when we're on social media, we win, and they don't like that. I think that's important for us to understand. All right. Moving to the regional front. Sweet Cakes down in Oregon, this shop that didn't want to participate in a same-sex wedding ceremony, but baking a cake for it, fined $135,000. That fine upheld. Again, going to freedom of conscience and freedom of speech. On a positive note on the regional front, in the Bundy Ranch trial, if you haven't heard, if you've been hiding underground somewhere, on Monday, Judge Navarro ruled a mistrial with prejudice. Essentially, the case is dismissed. They've been vindicated, in large part due to the memo by Larry Wooten, the lead investigator in the Bundy case, to Kent Kleeman, Andrew Goldsmith, the national coordinator for discovery, where he alleges some just outrageous conduct. Among that Special Agent in Charge Dan Love had a kill book and bragged about driving three people to suicide, among other things. We are moving forward now, drafting a letter, and I'm working between several states, so it's taking me longer. I wanted to get it out yesterday. I couldn't get it out yesterday because I've got another state that wants to get on board with their legislators. So we're working on that right now. We're going to get a letter out, I hope by Monday, to the Trump administration, Secretary Zinke, the Department of Justice, and Congress, asking them for a formal investigation into the impropriety here, especially the impropriety alleged by Special Agent Wu. Also on the regional front, this session, highlight a few things for you. House Bill 2422, the magazine ban This is the high-capacity magazine ban in Washington state that they want to push forward. This goes, this is a separate bill from the assault, so-called assault weapons ban that is also on the table. Now, there was a rumor out there that people thought that these bills had been killed on the first day of session. They have not. That was an old video that somebody found and put it back out. These bills are still alive. There is a bump stock ban also that is supposed to be introduced tomorrow in the legislature as well. So we're going to keep our eyes on this. It's going to be a huge fight. On Monday, the 15th, in the Senate, they're going to hear a lot of these gun control bills. The House hearings on the gun control bills have not yet been scheduled, but I will let you know when they are. We need to be involved. We need to be ever vigilant. Also, on the regional front in the session, biochar, Washington State Animal Identification System. Let me talk about biochar first. Biochar is essentially charcoal that is put into the ground after it's ground up in a special way, put in the ground. It holds water and can be used in agricultural areas, especially dryland farming, to dramatically improve the soil. The great thing is that biochar can come from burned wood, such as what happened with the catastrophic wildfires. So we could take some of that burned wood out of our forests, we can put it into biochar, and then we can put it in the ground in our agricultural areas. A win-win. I introduced a bill. It's actually a resolution to promote the use of biochar wherever we can. There's a company in Spokane Valley that actually makes biochar and also one up north as well in the 7th Legislative District. So very important stuff that you may never have heard of, and I'll have more of that in some future shows. Washington State Animal Identification System. We had Ted Wishon on last week talking about this idea of chipping cows and trying to track them wherever they are. Lots of problems with that. In addition to the fact that it actually slows down their ability to respond to disease outbreaks. So as Dave Taylor said on Tuesday, really the better way is just to go through our branding program, which was the original animal identification system that we had in the state of Washington. All right. Also on the session front, want to talk quickly about the tax situation. I mentioned the sugar tax, okay? It's a 2 cent per ounce tax. So, for example, you're drinking a 12-ounce soda, it would be a 24-cent tax on that soda. That goes in conjunction with the carbon tax. So, again, imagine yourself at the gas pump, pumping gas, sipping on a soda with a vacuum cleaner in your back pocket, and you I think, get the gist of where the tax situation is. But in addition to that, today in the Senate, the Senate Democrat. All right, looks like we're back on again. Kind of interesting as soon as I talk about taxes, we get cut off. But bottom line is, Senate Democrats remove the two-thirds requirement to raise taxes. Huge problem, in my opinion. It was an important check in the system, and that was one of the first things they do. So that's signaling they want to raise taxes this session. That's what they want to do. All right, also talking about water. Now, some people saw an announcement this morning that there has been a Hearst resolution. That is not true. I'm going to say it again. That is not true. There has been no agreement reached, at least as far as the House Republicans are concerned. And I would just add that we need to stop holding water hostage, Mr. Governor, and we need to address this serious issue for rural Washington. They talk about jobs in the capital budget, but the fact is we're losing more jobs, and this is having a greater economic impact if we continue to go down this road with the Hearst decision. We've got to fix it instead and return property rights to rural property owners, especially over their water. I say that because if you can't build on your property, what worth is it to you? So stop holding the water hostage, Governor Inslee. Stop it. They want to do gallonage per day maximums and all kinds of, it's nuts, okay? But you can weigh in as the people. You can weigh in. All right, lastly, on the local front, talking about this Bob West story. Bob West, the vice chair of the Sheriff's Citizen Advisory Board, been doing quite a bit of research into this. Interesting. So we obtained the letter of termination. I read from the letter of termination. Some people are saying that that's just not accurate. Well, the letter is what I read from. He was terminated for violating anti-bullying, anti-harassment, anti-retaliation policies of the city of Spokane. That's what the letter said. The letter also said he was terminated because he violated electioneering policies. In other words, he was using public resources for an election, and his daughter happened to be running at the time. So people that are coming back and saying, well, it must not have been connected to the daughter's election. I mean, you know, come on. Seriously? Come on. The AP has picked this story up now. Look, somebody gets caught doing this, they should not be in charge in any capacity of advising law enforcement. They shouldn't. If they're caught with a significant breach of public trust, I mean, it just makes sense, right? And it's ridiculous that some people are trying to argue about this or to downplay it. And the spokesman review, the socialist review, tries to downplay that as well and say that, oh, he had to violate those policies because there were outside forces that were threatening him and he had to violate. What? Who makes that kind of stuff up? Tried to say these outside forces forced me to do it. I mean, that sounds weird, and it sounds, I would say, unbalanced, okay? I think that's putting it nicely. The bottom line is somebody is caught doing this kind of stuff at the local level. They need to be investigated, and the appropriate actions need to be taken. And if the legislature needs to weigh in because there isn't the appropriate ability to hold people accountable, then the legislature needs to do that, and that's what we're investigating. So continue to watch this story. It's a huge story locally. And I think that really for all of us, especially Christians, you know, you don't try to cover up for bad behavior. You can't really say you're a Christian if you're covering up for bad behavior. You gotta move down the road that you are allowed to move down with the jurisdiction and authority that you're supposed to move down, the power that you're allowed to move down. Do what you can do to hold people accountable and prevent bad behavior. Now, we're not going to do it in every instance. It's not going to be possible in every instance. But in the places it is possible, we should do it, affording people due process and also following Matthew 18. I think that's pretty simple. And we strive to do the right thing, even though we fall short as fallible human beings. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for me and for all the other legislators. Really appreciate it. Thank you for praying for Victoria as well. It's like a tour of duty going over here, you know, and leaving your family. So just thank you to everybody. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US, like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you get a chance, you want to shoot me a note, just email me at matt@voteshay.com. And please be patient. We're getting hundreds and hundreds of emails a day. It is almost impossible to keep up. And that doesn't include the messages and texts, okay, so and phone calls. So please be patient. We'll get to you. That brings me to our guest today, Cheryl Hancock, coming to us, I think. Are you coming to us out of Israel today?
Well, today I'm in California.
Well, that's much better. Well, thank you very much for joining us on Patriot Radio once again.
Yeah, it's nice for the timing here. Over there, we're 10 hours ahead, so it's always hard.
Well, as you're reporting from Israel, moniker is, I really appreciate you giving us kind of the skinny of what's happening on the ground over there, because there's so much occurring. Let's start first, Cheryl, with the announcement by Trump to move the embassy to Jerusalem. How was that taken on the streets in Israel?
Well, I talked to a lot of Israelis. It happened when I was there, of course. And what they were saying is, you know, we know that Jerusalem is our capital. We've known that. It's been our capital from the beginning when King David took over the city years ago, 3,000 years ago. They said, but it's nice that somebody stands up to the plate and has the courage to say that it's our capital. So they really thank Trump for doing this for them.
Well, I think it's hard for some people to say that the Bible might be a title deed to something, too. I know there are people that were kind of upset at that implication. What was the Palestinian reaction over there?
Well, of course, the Palestinians don't agree with that. What they're trying to say is that Israel is not connected to Jerusalem at all, that the Jews shouldn't be there. They came there after they've been dispersed all over the world, and they do not have ties to Jerusalem. As a matter of fact, Abbas, the leader of the Palestinian Authority, said that Israel is making up their history. And Israel, of course, has been doing archaeology for many, many years. I was a part of that. I love archaeology. I found a Babylonian arrowhead. And that proves that the Babylonians came in, took the Jews into captivity, just like the Bible says. So, of course, there's been rioting on the streets, but not really in Israel proper. It's all been in Ramallah, Bethlehem, Jericho, places that are under the Palestinian control. The problem is they go right up to the fence of getting into Israel, and there are security officers there, and they start rioting and throwing rocks. And so they've had to, shoot out the tear gas and rubber bullets, and that's where the problem areas are. Now, a little bit has been happening in Jerusalem, especially around the Damascus Gate, because it's more of an Arab area, and they've been rioting there. So the riots have been not as bad as what people have been thinking or people wrote to me about, but the attacks have increased since December 6th when Trump did announce that the capital of Israel is Jerusalem and the embassy would be moved there. So just yesterday, I don't know if you've heard about the attack yesterday that happened.
I did. Actually, let's go straight into it. Go ahead and tell the listeners about it.
Yeah, it was a very sad one. They had a burial, I think it was today, but a rabbi was driving home after going shopping, and he was ambushed by Palestinians. They drove up next to him and began shooting, and over 20 shots, and of course, the rabbi was killed. The rabbi was 35 years old, and he was a father of six children from ages 10 months to 10 years old. And that's what's been going on in Israel. There are random attacks, whether it's knife attacks, shooting attacks, or ramming attacks. And like I said, it's gone up since December 6th, and we don't see that it's going to be coming to an end anytime soon. So, of course, everyone is concerned about what to do. What is the government going to do about this? So it's really a hard situation with the Israelis right now. They knew that when Trump announced that the embassy would be moved, that there would be problems. But he got Netanyahu's okay before Trump made the announcement. They thought it may be even worse than what it is right now. But it was a very sad situation to have that happen to such a young family.
Yeah, it's just horrible. And it seems like that gets skipped by all these boycott, divest, sanction people, right? They never bring up that part of it where a father of six is gunned down like that. What has this meant? I know you've probably had a lot of deep personal conversations with Israelis. What has this announcement meant to them? And how do they feel about it? Because for many years, the United States really wasn't a friend of Israel.
Yeah, right. And, this was passed. This bill was passed in 1995. Our Congress said we are going to move the embassy since 1995 over to Jerusalem, and every president, every 6 months, had a waiver brought in front of him, and he signed the waiver saying, no, we do not want it to be moved now because they are afraid of problems. So since 1995, it was already a bill that was passed. So the people that I talked to said, it's amazing that this man has the courage to speak the truth. And that's what's going on in Israel. There's a lot of lies against the Jewish people. And people in America, people overseas are all believing this, especially our kids that go to the universities. They are listening to different people coming from the Middle East and saying things about Israel that aren't true, such as what you were talking about. And they call them apartheid. There is no apartheid in Israel. And people can go there, go to Jerusalem, sit on a train, and there's Jews and Arabs alike on the train, in the stores. We have Arab Knesset members, and we have Arab doctors and lawyers and judges. There is no apartheid. So there's a lot of lies right now, and they're trying to delegitimize Israel and say Israel is not even a real state. And so all these things are coming against Israel. It's like a big battle continually. So the people there are so thankful for Trump, speaking the truth. That's all they want, people to speak the truth.
I think that is all people want, you know. And I've heard from a lot of people, but I particularly paid attention to Benjamin Netanyahu, that, you know, this recognition, you know, brings a renewed hope to Israel and a lot of Israelis, that there is a renewed hope that there are countries out there that recognize that they have a legitimate right to exist where they are.
Exactly. Actually, there were a couple Arab countries. Well, there was an Egyptian that talked about it who said, you know what, Israel is for the Jewish people. We know that. That's the history. And then there was another man that spoke about it from Kuwait. He was on a television program. He said, this is the truth. And Arabs need to understand that this was a place where the Jews were. It's their history. They're finding all kinds of archaeological artifacts. And, of course, they belong in Israel. It even talks about it in the Quran. So why they're doing this, why they're saying that the Jews are not connected. And, of course, the UN had a vote. The UN General Assembly had a vote recently. And 128 nations agreed that Israel does not have any connection to Jerusalem, which is appalling, because we're talking about France, Germany, England, and there were 9 people that voted for Israel, that they do have a connection to Jerusalem, America being one, and then they had 35 abstentions. So what? I mean, people aren't saying the truth as far as the history goes, and I know the history is in the Bible, and if you don't believe the Bible, you can throw that away, but there is history in Josephus. There's other history that goes back. It's the truth, and that's all, like you said, that's all they want. They just want the truth.
And that's just 2,000 years ago, which most people will take as extant history. They will say that history has been corroborated. Historians use some of those sources, and they talk about the fact that the Jews were indeed there, and at that time that there were documents, especially like the Library of Alexandria, going back even further to establish some of these claims. And those are just secular sources. This seems so simple to me, and yet it is so divided and it's so emotional. Why, personally, you know, talking to all these people, being over there, why do you think that is?
Well, I think that especially the Palestinian people, what they call the Palestinian people, they want to take that land and they want the Jews out of Israel. And I'm not saying that from what my opinion is. I'm saying that from what the Arabs and the Muslims I work with tell me. As a matter of fact, I interviewed one guy. He was a Muslim. He was a terrorist, and he changed his whole life around. I was able to sit down and talk to him, and I interviewed him on the radio. And he told me, first I asked him, well, what will give you guys peace? I mean, what does Israel have to give so that you will have peace with them? And he said, they must leave. And that was it. So there is no other way to have peace. As you notice, Abbas is not going to the negotiation table. He keeps moving around, doing other things, everything but sitting and negotiating peace. He's also having in the school books, teaching the children that are in third grade that when they grow up, they need to become martyrs or heroes for their country and take the land back. So if you teach a third grader, when he becomes in 10 years, 15 years, he's going to become someone against the country, Israel, their neighbor. So where's the peace in that? Also, the Palestinian Authority is paying people to attack Israelis. It's a well-known fact. There is a wage scale that I've read and I can send you and show people. This is the wage. If you attack a Jew and you go to prison, you will get this much. If you get 3 years, you get so much money. If you get 10 years, you get so much money. If you kill them, you get even more money. And if you die, your family gets the money. So your family's taken care of for the rest of their lives. This comes straight from the Palestinian Authority. And so we're trying to pass a bill called the Taylor Force Act in Washington. Taylor Force was a tourist. He was a West Point graduate. He was having a good evening with his wife, and he was attacked by a Palestinian, an Arab, and killed. And so the Taylor Force Act is saying, hey, to our government in Washington, stop funding the Palestinians so that they have money to pay people to go and kill Jews. So our government is taking it seriously now, and how refreshing for the people of Israel. They do, as you just said, they do have more hope that maybe things will be turned around and people will understand the truth about what's going on in Israel.
You know, I hear I hear a lot of people, especially here in Olympia, talk about this the same way. It will only be solved if Israel leaves. Well, you know what? I mean, that sounds actually like Russia back in the Stalin era. Sounds like China. Sounds like, oh, I don't know, a certain German person. I mean, I don't think they realize what they're saying when they say something like that. And the fact that this really was established a long, long, long time ago and shouldn't be an issue, I think goes to show that that part of the Middle East is really not going to be solved until the Lord comes back. I don't know how it can be solved.
That's true. I took a survey one time in the old city of Jerusalem. I spoke with Jews, Arab Christians, and when I took this survey, Muslims, Jews, and Christians, I said, what does it mean to pray for the peace of Jerusalem? We all know that there's not going to be any peace. What does it mean? And they all said that when the Messiah comes, there will be peace and not before. So no one is expecting peace in the Middle East until the Messiah comes. There will always be problems there.
Well, on that note, it was interesting to see that the Israelis launched airstrikes into Syria. How is that situation as complex as it is with Syria, with Hezbollah in Lebanon, with the Iranians flexing muscle, with the Russians down there, and all of the things in between? How do you see that situation, and how do Israelis see that situation over there right now?
Well, right now, of course, we're on high alert. And there are missiles that land in Israel. Israel has warned Russia and Syria that if anything lands in Israel territory, that he will fire back. And that's what he's been doing. Russia and Israel have a good agreement. So Russia is keeping their planes and everything over in the Syrian area. And sometimes the mortar comes over, sometimes on purpose and sometimes accidentally. But Israel always fires back, hitting whatever it was that they used to fire on them. But also Israel has a hospital, a hospital over there on the border, because there are so many people that are hurt, wounded, kids that are orphaned. They took in 100, Israel took in 100 little children, Arab children from Syria, and gave them to families, Arab families in Jerusalem, because they had no life. And Israel takes the people from the hospital there, makeshift hospital there, to the hospitals in Israel, and they help them, and they fix them up, and then send them back to where they live, of course. So it's been a hard situation for Israel. They don't want fighting on their border, and they are trying to keep Syria and try to keep Russia on that side with the fight against the rebels. But also now Iran has decided they would start a base in Syria near the border of Israel. First, they wanted 5 kilometers away, which is about 3 miles away. And then I think they decided on 30 kilometers. I'm not quite sure of the number right now. They were negotiating. But there is an Iranian base where they are going to have a factory to build guided missiles that they can get to Hezbollah, which is in Lebanon, the northern border of Israel. So you have Iran on the border with Syria, and these weapons are going to be built, taken to the northern Israel border, to Hezbollah, and that is a very dangerous situation right now. They have already hundreds. Netanyahu told us one time at a press conference, 120,000 rockets on the border of Israel and Lebanon, Hezbollah has. Why are they getting more rockets now, especially guided ones? So if they want to hit the Knesset, they can guide it to the Knesset, and Iran's helping them. So it's really a very hard situation. This is not going to be an end. Even if this war ends between the Syrians, it's not going to be an end for Israel. It's probably going to be a beginning.
Well, imagine if we had an Iranian base 3 miles south of the Mexican border, right? And they were arming with rockets and suicide bombers and everything else. We would have a massive military response to something like that, right? But everybody expects Israel just to sit back and kind of take it.
That's true. That's true. And Israel does have to watch out for Russia, who is there, Syria, the regime that is there. And they're trying to say, just don't cross the border. We do not want Iran in Syria. because what's going to happen is Iran is helping Hezbollah, and Iran is helping Hamas. Hamas is in Gaza Strip, which is on the southern border of Israel. So if Hamas has Iranian weapons, and Hezbollah on the northern border has Iranian weapons, and Iran has weapons on the eastern border of Israel, they could all fire at once, and that would be one hard time for Israel. It's a scenario that could possibly happen.
Well, so recently the Trump administration did something that I've been waiting for a very, very, very long time. Not even Reagan did this. He brought up the idea of cutting off foreign aid to Pakistan and also even the Palestinian Authority. What was the discussion, and what is the discussion right now with the Israelis on the street? What do they think about that? Are they supportive of such an idea, or is that kind of met with, oh, that'll never happen?
No, actually, they seen Trump in action. They saw that he said he was going to move the embassy and say that Jerusalem was the capital of Israel, and he did it. And he did stop the funding in Pakistan. He has taken some funding away from the UN, UNRWA, who works only for the Palestinian refugees. That's their only cause. And thousands upon thousands of hundreds of thousands of dollars have been going to them. So Trump took away, I think it was 25% or one third away from the funding. And now the Palestinian Authority, this Taylor Force Act, if they take money away from the Palestinian Authority, they wouldn't have so much money to pay the terrorists to kill. So Israelis are looking at this like, gosh, somebody's finally doing something that understands our situation. Trump has taken time to understand what's really going on. He talked to Abbas when Abbas went to Washington, and he told him, you know, I can move the embassy, but if you're willing to have peace with the people of Israel, you sit down at the negotiating table, we'll work with you. Just stop paying the terrorists and stop paying people to kill Israelis and make your school books better. Teach them to love their neighbors. Teach them good things. So when they grow up, they can live in peace with their neighbors. But what did Abbas do? He went back and he raised the wages of the terrorists, gave them more money, and then also he changed the school books to make them worse. So Trump saw this and said, okay, fine. And so he moved the embassy. He's a man of his word. He gave him a chance, 6 months, to show that he wants peace, that the leader of the Palestinian Authority wants peace, Abbas. And he didn't do it. He did just the opposite. So Israelis are seeing this, and they are so grateful for what's going on. Then the truth is getting out a little bit more here and there. So I don't know. They really like it. It's really good for Israel. But on the other hand, you have the Arabs, especially the Palestinians, they're just, I can't go into what the Palestinian is, but the Arab Muslims in Israel and in the West Bank areas, they are rioting. They are, of course, going to throw fits for everything. They, right now, I just read an article that Abbas said he doesn't care if he gets American money. He's going to go to the EU and try to get the money that America is not going to send him anymore. So he does this quite a bit. He goes to different countries and asks for funding, and he gets it sometimes. So we'll see what happens.
So he's essentially admitting he doesn't need it. Then we should cut it off. Perfect.
Yeah, but you know, yeah, right. But he's just saying that, you know, he's so against America right now. They were burning pictures of Trump during Christmas time and burning American flags. And I mean, this went on before, but not like the intenseness of it after Trump made his announcement. So, no, for me, I would go into Arab villages and visit people, to the Muslims, Palestinians, take them food, take them clothing. And now it's too dangerous for me to go in those villages because they will kill you. If you're American, if you, like me, I write the truth, and they know that. So it's a very dangerous place for me to go right now.
Well, if you could, we've only got about 4 minutes left, but if you could take a few minutes and kind of give us a trajectory for 2018 and what you see coming for the Middle East.
Interesting. Well, we know that the war in Syria has to come to an end, and so they're talking about this, but we don't know when that's going to exactly happen. If it does come to an end, Israel's going to be definitely on high alert because now Hezbollah is actually over there fighting with the Syrian regime, and they'll be done with that. They'll be back in Lebanon for something to do. They could actually attack Israel. And, of course, Iran doesn't want to get off the border of Israel, so they looks like they're going to have a permanent base there. Hamas is building up rockets. They just found another tunnel that leads into Israel that they can attack Israelis with. So the borders are heating up. And also in 2018, I see good things happening on the other side. A new synagogue was opened just recently. It took 12 years to build, but it's underneath the Temple Mount in the area where they believe the Holy of Holies was, where the temple was, and it's underneath, and they built a synagogue for people to come in to pray. They are getting ready for the third temple like crazy. I've never seen this. I mean, they have a new Sanhedrin now that was almost extinct for 2,000 years. 2004, the Sanhedrin comes back. They appointed a high priest. They're starting to do sacrifices with grains and different things like this. They made oil from olives, as you're supposed to, what it says in the Bible, to have it ready for the menorah, the lamp that goes into the temple. You see more Jews going onto the Temple Mount than ever before. They want to worship their God on the Temple Mount where God called them to worship. So there's going to be a lot of excitement going on in 2018.
Wow. I mean, it's almost hard to keep up with. My goodness, I don't know how you're doing over there, but the aligning of countries, so you have Saudi Arabia, Egypt, the UAE versus kind of Iran, what's left of Syria, Hezbollah, Lebanon, you've kind of have Turkey trying to reassert some form of position in the Middle East, Jordan stepping out and saying, we're the true defenders of Islam. How do you see that alignment throughout 2018?
Well, I see that the lines are going to be drawn a little bit more clearly. You have Saudi Arabia, like you said, Egypt, you have the GCC, the Gulf Cooperation Council, which are mostly Sunni Muslims. Sunnis have been against the Shiites, and the Shiites, you see Iran, Syria, Iraq, Hezbollah, and now Hamas is following the Shiites. The Shiites are the worst of the two as far as America is concerned, because America can work with the Sunnis. And Saudi Arabia does not want Iran to have a nuclear bomb. If they have a nuclear bomb, they can hold that over the head of everyone. I'll push the button if you don't do this. I'll push the button if you don't do that. Saudi Arabia wants America. They're supposed to buy $7 billion worth of weapons from America so they can protect. They are now the top dog in the Middle East, but they're afraid Iran having a nuclear bomb is going to take over that position. We don't want that to happen because there won't be any free flow of oil anymore. Oil prices will go way up because they know that they can just, you know, take the world hostage if they have that. So it'll be an interesting time.
Cheryl, if people want to follow you, where can they go? How can they contact you?
The best thing to do is just send me an email. I have a little email update I put out that tells the truth about what's happening in Israel. They can email me at email address reportingfromisrael@gmail.com. All one word, reportingfromisrael@gmail.com. And I will get you on the list so you can hear what's really happening on the ground or ask me questions. That would work.
And you are actually going to be here in the summer, and we want to really try to make it happen so you can actually have an event, give folks a briefing face-to-face in Spokane Valley, Washington. So I really look forward to making sure we can coordinate that.
Yeah, I look forward to that, too. We're going to be driving from Northern California all the way up to Spokane, speaking all the way up. So we'll set a date. We'll be there. And for as long as you guys want, as far as answering questions, giving presentations, you know, we need to really know what's going on in our world. And as Christians, as Americans, we need to know, because it really does affect us and will affect us more in the future.
Well, Cheryl, thank you for everything that you're doing. God bless you. Godspeed. And enjoy your time in California.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Nice talking to you, Matt.
All right. Cheryl Hancock reporting from Israel. @gmail.com, reportingfromisrael@gmail.com. Just giving us a skinny on what's going on the ground in the Middle East. And as you could hear, it's just fascinating. There's so much happening. And 2018 is shaping up to be a seminal year, a year of great change, great aligning in the Middle East. And I think it's incumbent upon us not just to pay attention, but as Cheryl implied too, to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. It's a very important thing to keep that in our minds as we're going about our daily lives and our prayer lives, because the Middle East does affect the United States directly. I want to shift gears as we end the show here, going back to the legislature here in Olympia. Wow. So much going on. It's a short session. It's supposed to be a 60-day session. Things are moving very, very fast. Please, please get involved. Email, call your state representative, your state senator. Tell them how you feel on gun control. Tell them how you feel on all these taxes they're putting forward. Tell them how you feel on everything. But then more than tell them how you feel, tell them what they can do to actually represent your views. That's the important part of a republic, rule of law. Because right now, with one-party control, we're back to the same old game of trying to run over the top of everybody and represent the views of just downtown Seattle instead of all of Washington. As I said the other day, an emerald curtain has descended over downtown Seattle. It's our job to raise it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for joining me today on Patriot Radio. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.